And now, In-Flight Entertainment is proud to present Marauder Radio.
Oh, you men are all alike. 7 or 8 quick ones and you're off with the boys to boast and brag. You better keep your mouth shut. Oh, I think I love him.
Maybe we should chug on over to Mamby Pamby Land, where maybe we can find some self-confidence for you, you jackwagon.
You may be right.
Oh, it looks good on you, though.
I may be crazy.
Okay. Good.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the host of Marauder Radio, your lunatic lover and poet, Mr. Bob Zima.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. And especially thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the beautiful Grumpy Gator Cafe. My name is Bob Zima. And I am the cafe's resident lunatic lover and poet, and this is Marauder Radio Live for Mental Wellness. Or let's try it the way it's actually written. It's Marauder Radio for Mental Wellness Live on Blog Talk Radio. It's live, which means that you can call in. You've got something you want to say. You want to share some perspective. You want to challenge me. Hey, I love a challenge. I love to be challenged. Yes, indeedy. Just ask my children and my wife and my friends and my family. And anyways, if you want to call in at any time during the showgram, you can reach out to us at 515-605-9800. Again, that number is 515-605-9800. You can jump on the world's largest therapy couch and be a part of the radio showgram coming to you live from the Grumpy Gator Cafe. Yeah. Anyways, everybody, I want to take a little bit of a pivot. Today with the radio show and talk more about life and love. Hey, yeah. Talk a little bit more about me. Yes, a middle-aged, white, somewhat fat guy. Born and raised in the Christian faith, living in the suburbs, college educated, got a master's degree. So basically, folks, I am the living definition of what's wrong with America. All that privilege and nothing to show for it. Yes, indeedy. But I want to talk today just about what life is like, you know, because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who want to know what the thoughts are of a crazy middle-aged white guy. Overeducated, underemployed, you know, and just what he has to think about life and love. And so I'm going to make a pivot today, and that's what we're going to kind of focus on. Yes, we are. Speaking of which, last week there was no radio show, Graham, because I was in Viva Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. Flew to Sin City. My son. Spent 2 years out in Sin City. He was getting a bachelor's degree, Bachelor of Arts in Political Science. He was out at UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, for 2 years, and we traveled out for his graduation. Exciting for us because my daughter, who's a remarkable person herself, just like her brother, got a master, or no, she had a bachelor's of arts in business marketing, and she graduated actually from St. Louis University in Madrid. So it was slum, St. Louis University Madrid. So she was slumming it. But we were supposed to go over to Madrid, España. We were going to engage in her commencement ceremony over there and then travel Europe for 3 or 4 weeks. But there was something known as the coronavirus in March of 2020, just 2 months or so before the travels that we had set up. And, of course, you know, the world shut down, and she came home. And we ended up engaging in a Zoom group. You could even call it that. I mean, it was nice to see some of her professors and some of the students that she worked with, but it was cocktail parties that people used to have, you know, where you just get a you get a drink and a coffee or whatever it is, and you're zooming. We're going to zoom, 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 zoom. Come on, give it a try. We're going to see if we can fly. Yeah. But anyways, we were down in Las Vegas, Nevada. I had a great time. My parents came in. My daughter and her boyfriend came in. And my wife's aunt and uncle from Go came in. But it was fun, you know, graduations, you know, you're sort of like, oh, God, 2 hours of speeches and read off and 5 seconds of you hooping and hollering and hooting and hollering for your loved one or friend, which could be a loved one too, right? Loved ones don't have to necessarily be genetically connected to us. They could certainly be friends, you know. But hooting and hollering and go, woo-ah, because they graduated. But it was nice. UNLV did a really good job. They had a great jazz band that played, great jazz band singing some tunes, putting their own spin on some popular tunes, but also doing some things I hadn't heard before. But they were really, really good. It was really neat to hear. And, man! They were good. I just thinking back to it right now, just thinking, dang, they were good. And it was neat to kind of see the kids come in. They had the various banners for the different schools like nursing, urban affairs, liberal arts, business. And it was kind of cool. It was almost like watching the Olympics because these banners would come in, you know, it'd be like watching the different countries that come in. And the students came in. They all had red cap and gown, which was nice too, right? Rebel Red for the UNLV Rebels. Used to be Running Rebs. They dropped the running. Now they're just Rebels, I guess. That's because we don't move much in society anymore. We just sort of sit and collect dust. But no longer the running, just the Rebs. So they had Rebel Red on. It was really cool to see that too. But overall, not a bad experience. A lot of fun. Had a great time. Went out for some barbecue, which seems kind of strange in Texas, or Texas, in Las Vegas, that we'd go out for some barbecue. But we went out to a place called Lucille's, which is, there's a group of them out in the western area of this great country of ours, America. But we had a great time. Nothing, I mean, man, when you can get brisket and ribs and barbecue chicken, I mean, life is good. We had a really good time. Had a great time, and it was so much fun to be out there. And also got to see Penn and Teller. Now, that was fun. Always so weird to see somebody that you've seen on television multiple times or, you know, is famous, and then all of a sudden they're like 100 feet from you on stage doing what it is that made them famous. And it's just kind of like, wow, that's really cool. And to think that they've been doing it for 40 years, 40 years. And it got me thinking, you know, how many of us out there have done something for 40 years? I haven't even been married for 40 years. And marriage, 30-some, is the one thing I've actually committed myself to. Otherwise, I'm like, you know, huh, what, squirrel, huh? Oh, squirrel. I am constantly looking for that new opportunity, that doorway that's going to take me into a new hallway, that's going to lead me to a new adventure. But to think that they've been doing this for 40 years, the staying power, the resiliency, the focus that it takes to do something for 40 years. I mean, think about your own life. Is there anything that you have done consistently? Let's say for even half the time. I could raise my hand and say, yeah, marriage. I could raise my hand and say, yeah, parenting. Parenting wasn't really a choice, right? I mean, parenting is the result of a couple of really good evenings. But at the end of the day, parenting is about as selfish as it comes, right? Because we agree, we being, you know, two people, agree to bring a child into the world. Now, that, of course, is the old-fashioned way. Got to remember, I'm a middle-aged white guy. So I often associate parenting with a man and a woman who had sex, and a baby is born. But nowadays, in the 2020s, it'd be anything. You can have two people adopt a baby. You can have one person adopt a baby. You can have people adopt a cat, and they consider themselves to be a fur mommy. Hey, I got nothing against it. That's not what I'm saying at all. Because you're entitled to do whatever the hell it is you want to do. Just don't piss on my parade. And I won't piss on yours. And so at the end of the day, for me, when I think about parenting, I think about a man and a woman had a little baby. That makes three in the family. And I realized that lots of people got my, I have a cousin who adopted a young girl from a foreign country. And it was the two of them that made a family. So, you know, we could sing, a woman adopted a girl from Guatemala that made two in the family. We can switch it up. You know? And the beauty of it is that we can be tolerant, right? We can be tolerant of other people and their choices. Something that is running very scarce in this country these days is tolerance. We don't have a lot of tolerance. And I'm sure there's many reasons for it. And we're not going to get into them here, but I think tolerance would be a great idea. Tolerance could be a really good idea, quite honestly. But parenting, back to Penn and Teller, parenting for 20 years, I've done that. I've done that for 25 years now. And it's a commitment, right? But it's a commitment I choose to make by bringing a child into the world, quite possibly the most selfish thing we can do, which is to bring a child into particularly this world, with very interesting. And, you know, my wife and I always say, man, we grew up at the best time, man, the 70s and 80s. But I think every generation says that. And now I'm that guy, you know, that says, oh, my gosh, the time that I grew up was so much superior to the time that you're growing up in. And I'm that guy. I remember when my parents said that. I remember when my grandparents said that. And now I'm that guy who talks about how great life is when they were in high school or college or early adulthood. But 40 years, I kept thinking, good God, how, you know, to the mundaneness of it from time to time. Somebody, I think it was my mother, we had gone out to Vegas on Thursday, Friday night. We went to see a AAA baseball game for the Las Vegas Aviators, played the Albuquerque, what were they? God, Isotopes, there we go, I was going to say. My memory is going to hell. They played the Isotopes. Isotopes, of course, because they're in New Mexico and Albuquerque, and that's where some of the laboratories were for nuclear science, so to speak, right? Hey, it's the bomb, baby. But we went to a game on Friday. Saturday was the graduation, and Sunday was Mother's Day, of course. So we had my wife, my mother, we all went out for a Mother's Day brunch at just a fantastic Peruvian-influenced Mexican fusion kind of a place called Peyote, if you're ever out in Vegas. Peyote's at 11th and Fremont. It's old school Vegas, baby. Old school, back downtown. But, man, it was just a phenomenal meal in a phenomenal setting. Sitting outside, desert garden area, covered, so we were not sitting in the sun. It was just phenomenal. And then it was Sunday night. Went to Yardbirds, yes. I had promised my daughter's boyfriend that we would have the best chicken and waffles ever, and it is at Yardbirds at the Venetian. And then we went to Penn and Teller, and I remember sitting there thinking, my goodness, you know, how do you keep it fresh? How do you keep yourself motivated and focused on something you've been doing for 40 years? How do you keep yourself, you know, ready to perform? Bunch of people like me, seeing them for the first time live. They've been doing this for 40 years. My mother was asking, you know, Monday morning, how do you think they keep it fresh? And I said, well, number one, variety. Every audience is different. Every interaction is very different. And so for some of us, we love that variety, that variety of shaking it up by the people that we're interacting with can sometimes be the secret sauce, right? The magic in the secret sauce. You know, think about it. If you're a physician or you're a lawyer or you're a teacher or you're a counselor, right? At the end of the day, folks, life is not that complicated. We're happy, sad, or scared. Quite honestly, we're either happy, we're sad, or we're scared. And we're happy, sad, or scared because of the way our miraculous 3 pounds of gray matter that is wedged between our ears is interpreting the world around us. And for some of us, that interpretation is more about what's going on in the moment. It's more of an intuitive and a perceptive type of thing. Whereas other people, they're comparing what's going on in a moment to things that have happened in the past, which is more of a Rolodex type moment, right? More of a logical, rational process of understanding what's happening. Others, more intuitive, more perceptive, going with what's going on. Well, that cognitive process, whichever way it is, drives an emotion, happy, sad, or scared, or a mixture of any of the two, right? We can be happy and scared. It's called thrilling. We can be happy and sad. It's called remorse. Reminiscing. There we go. We can be happy and sad, right? When we're at a funeral, thinking about somebody's life, what they've meant to us. We can be happy and sad that our team just won the Stanley Cup, but the season is now over. And like I said, we can be happy and scared. It's called thrilling. We can be sad, and that just is called sucks. It sucks. But we think, then we feel, and then we act. And for some of us, that interaction with other people, even though we're doing the same thing as a surgeon, a pilot, right? Customer service representative, doesn't matter. What keeps you motivated to keep doing the same tasks over and over again for many years? It's the different interactions. It's the variety in that interaction. It's the variety of your interpretation of those interactions and the emotions that it drives, right? I'm working with clients every day. Each individual client is unique. They have a unique personality, temperament, life story. They are a unique entity, unique person. Our interactions are unique. Their stories, the things that drive them to think, that drive emotions, that drive behaviors, well, those are all very consistent. That's not where the complexity is. We all feel sad. We all feel scared. We all feel happy. Different levels, different elevational levels, right? Some of us really happy, particularly when we win the lotto. Some of us really sad, particularly when somebody we love just died. We could be frightened, particularly when we think we're going to be given the diagnosis of cancer or we're going to be terminated from our job. Either way, folks, we feel these emotions because we think. And sometimes we end up doing things like parenting, marriage, careers. We do the same things over and over again. But what keeps us motivated, what keeps us in it, is our ability to interpret and understand, you know, what's going on in the moment. I was noticing when I was in Vegas, my Fitbit was telling me that my heart rate was super high. I mean, I was always up in the, you know, fat burning zone at times. But that's because, not that I was walking around the strip or in the desert. It's because I was with family and friends. I was excited. I was also a little nerve-wracked at times. Are we going to get a good seat for the commencement ceremony? Should we park? Should we Uber? When we go meet my son across campus, should we walk? Should we Uber? What should we do here? You know, because we've got some folks that walk across campus in 95-degree heat, even though it's a dry heat, might not be the best thing to do. But, you know, it was because it was an exciting thing. I look at my Fitbit now. It was only 2 minutes since I woke up this morning. Have I been in the fat burn area of heart rate? But when I was in Vegas, the excitement of it, the travel, right, kept it fresh. It's always fresh, always fun to go do something new because of that variety, and that's a good thing for our mind. Anyways, I'm going to take a brief break. I'm glad that you're with us here at the Grumpy Gator Cafe. I'll be back in just 2 minutes, so stay with us.
89 WLS. All right, let's pray. God of Rock, thank you for this chance to kick ass. We are your humble servants. Please give us the power to blow people's minds with our high-voltage rock. In your name we pray. Amen.
As long as there's, you know, sex and drugs, I can do without a rock and roll.
Marauder Radio, starring Bob Zima, Pirate King of the Hole in the Soul crew, will continue in just a moment.
Yeah,
pirate.
What are you doing in the bathroom day and night? Why don't you get out of there? Give someone else a chance.
Hey everybody, it's Bob Zima, and I just want to tell you about my brand new psychological masterpiece. That's right, I wrote a book, and it's called Toilet Therapy, Healing Anger.
Do not go in there.
Woo!
It's a crapper companion guide, and it's designed to help you remove the crap from your soul while you're, well, you know, doing your business in the library.
There is a tiger in the bathroom!
You can be the tiger in the bathroom that takes care of that roaring lion and tiger out in your real world. You'll spend hours and hours on the toilet with my crapper companion guide, learning how to heal your anger and improve the quality of your life.
Yeah, I believe you did tell your soul to the devil.
Cruise on over to BobZima.com to get your copy of Toilet Therapy Healing Anger and start your healing process today.
Who does number two work for?
Don't get me wrong, he seems like a nice guy, but my father's a nice guy, and he's not funny either.
If this is some kind of practical joke, it's not funny.
Don't you know a joke when you hear one?
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Yes. Welcome back, everybody, to the beautiful Grumpy Gator Cafe. My name is Bob Zima, and I am the cafe's resident lunatic lover and poet, and this is Marauder Radio. Arg, mateys, Marauder Radio, a pirate radio for mental health, mental wellness. Even though I am talking a lot about myself, which is my favorite topic, of course, I'm a therapist, for God's sakes, people. When do I ever get to talk about myself? When do I ever get to be cathartic and share my thoughts and feelings? Not often, you know, because when you're doing therapy, I mean, it should be about the client, right? Shouldn't it be about the client? Shouldn't it be about their story, their narrative? Absolutely. And then when you're a spouse and a parent, you always want to be open for, offer catharsis, offer empathy for your wife and children. So between the 40-some hours I'm spending every week being empathetic and reflective and listening to others, I do the same thing with my family. So very rarely do I get to do the old water cooler thing, and that's, I guess, what Marauder Radio is here, just sharing my thoughts. Sharing my thoughts, sharing my feelings. Yes, indeedy. So I'm talking about a Zoom call I had the other day that went really sideways. You know, oddly enough, in 2018, I already started doing telehealth medicine. I was working as a director of behavioral health for a community mental health center here in Illinois. And we're a very interesting county. Excuse me for clearing my throat. We're a very interesting county in that it can be very rural in our county. And so there are pockets of the county where there are urban areas, but then there is lots of land in between, right? So there's cities, but these towns and villages and cities, but sometimes they're going to be up to a 7 to 10 mile distance between them. And this can create difficulty for certain people who have limited income and limited resources to get to quality mental health, even at a community mental health center. And so we started to do telehealth, where we would bring psychiatry and case management and counseling to rural areas so people didn't have to own a car. There was very little transportation, public transportation out in this area. And so I had been doing telehealth long before the pandemic. And ever since the pandemic, I've done nothing but telehealth, exclusive telehealth, which is, you know, interesting in its own right. But I was on a Zoom call, business Zoom call, and was like, yeah, you know, not exactly feeling the Zoom call and not exactly into the conversation, be quite honest with you. I was quite bored. Now, I'm not saying that the other individual was boring or that the way in which they engaged was, you know, lackluster or whatever, but I was bored. And when I get bored, particularly when I'm in the studio here or I am doing video conferencing calls, you know, and it's been a long day of telehealth with people, and I've been staring at a computer screen for so long. After a while, just looking out the windows to give myself a different perspective isn't enough. I got beautiful views out my windows. I've got a cardinal's nest right outside my left window. The window I look at straight ahead, it's pretty, you know, but it's a lot of foliage. It's a very static thing. So occasionally I'll split my screen. And during the Zoom call, I had split my screen and put one of the NHL playoff hockey games on one side of the screen. The person I was engaging with, listening to, was on the other side. And it's like anything, right? How many times have you had a conversation in a car? You're watching the car or you're driving, right? And you're looking out and you're watching things. You're able to engage. Are you 100% focused? No. But I would even argue that we're never 100% focused. We're never 100% locked in on a given conversation. We start thinking, we're processing. It's our human nature. It's one of the reasons that communication breaks down all the time for people, is that one person starts sharing and talking, the other person starts interpreting, thinking, reflecting, and preparing their response. So no way are we ever 100% locked in. And how many times have we had a telephone call with someone when we're, you know, focused on something else, right? We could be walking and having a telephone conversation with someone. But I was in this Zoom call. I was bored. I was fatigued. And we were talking, I forget, it was about a conference thing or something. And so I'm like, oh, my gosh, I need more. And it was starting to get dark, and I needed more than just the windows that I look out of, because it was getting dark. And I thought, oh, I need something. I don't need something static. I need something with movement. So I split my screen, put on my YouTube TV over my internet, and was able to put this hockey game on. Now, I was watching and looking at the person and listening, although that was very difficult because I was bored. And like we were talking about with Penn and Teller, you know, how do you keep going at something that may become fatiguing cognitively, may become dry emotionally? How do you keep going? What do you keep doing? I mean, think about it. Think about your own time. You've been on Zoom calls, telephone calls, maybe just in the car listening to somebody. You know, when our mind gets fatigued, when our mind is not interested in the incoming information, what do? We look somewhere, we distract ourselves, we glance away, and then we come back to the conversation. So this is what I do sometimes, you know, in order to help me stay focused, in order for me to actually increase my focus during the Zoom call, I put this game on. Now, was I sitting there watching the game, eating peanuts like I would if I were at a bar? No. I had it on just to simply give me a distraction point that when I was finding it difficult to track and follow the conversation because I was bored out of my mind, I could pivot over to the game, give myself 3 or 4 seconds of something that was motion-oriented, reset my brain, and come back to the conversation. Problem is, when I was doing this, the reflection in some of the pictures behind me showed the person with whom I was in the Zoom call, showed them that I was watching a hockey game. Now, I didn't learn of this until after the fact when I reached out to the person and said, hey, are you interested in this business endeavor? Is this something you'd like to move forward with? This is a video presentation of my anger program called Calming the Storm. There was an interest in having that done over Zoom. And I have to be honest with you, too. Even though I enjoy giving my Calm the Storm workshops and presentations, you know, doing them over Zoom with 15 other people is tricky, difficult. I don't mind one-on-one individual counseling because that can be very intimate. But the minute you start to get to these webinars, it can become you know, particularly a webinar like Calm the Storm that needs a lot of interaction, just doesn't really work well. So I have to say, that was part of my boredom. I just wasn't into what we were saying. And I was in the back of my mind going, what a waste of time, right? Because what do we do when we're bored? We start to think this is a waste of time. I could be doing something else. People in church writing their grocery lists, for example, you know, or when you're at a graduation and you start scrolling through your phone because you're bored. And what do we need? We need visual stimulation, and sometimes it can't be that static thing. Well, anyways, the guy, person I was talking to got back to me and said, well, I don't think you were very interested. And I thought, oh, he could read my, he could read. That's good. Very perceptive. And they said, I noticed in the reflection of some of your photography you have in the background there, you were watching a hockey game. And I'm thinking, watching a, oh my gosh, yes. Okay. So then I wrote back and I said, hey, thanks for your insight. I appreciate you sharing that with me. I didn't want to sound like a dick. And I said, oh man, it would have been good if you brought that up during the conversation, because I could have shared with you what I was doing. I don't think I was watching a hockey game. I simply had something on that was not static, that was motion oriented, that would give me a chance to cleanse the palate, so to speak, cleanse my brain. But I wrote the email, and then I thought, you know, I don't need to defend myself. I don't even need to share that. If the person wasn't going to bring something up that was bothering them in the moment, then quite honestly, I'm not going to defend myself. And even if they did bring it up in the moment during the Zoom call, during the conference, I would have gladly said, shared what I was doing, and would have said, if it's too distracting, let me take it down, right? Initially, I was a little embarrassed. Whoops, got caught. But then I realized I wasn't watching the game and tuning them out intentionally. I was trying to do something that I've learned for myself is helpful to help me cleanse the palate and come back to something that I find cognitively fatiguing, right? Which is a nice way of saying boring, right? And I'm doing something cognitively stimulating. You know, I'm kind of going over here and I'm not watching the game. I couldn't tell you what the score was when I glance over. I couldn't tell you who had the puck. I'm not watching the game. It's simply a palate cleanser, so to speak, right? But I decided, you know what? It's not worth going through and trying to defend myself, you know. If the person doesn't want to do business because I was watching a hockey game during the Zoom call, and I wasn't really watching, I have to be careful here too, because I set that up beautifully and then I said watching, which may be a Freudian slip that I really was. But my recollection is it was just on to give my mind something that was not static to focus on for a few seconds to allow me to reset, to go back to a conversation that I felt was kind of pointless, kind of a waste of time. The person was kind of beating around the bush, you know. Now, I could also say, I could have stepped up and said, you know what, this isn't really going anywhere. I don't feel like we're accomplishing much. We seem to be going around and around and around. You called this meeting, but there doesn't seem to be an agenda. You called this meeting, but there doesn't seem to be a driver here. And after a long day, when there's something that doesn't feel very productive, I'm going to become fatigued with it. I'm going to get bored, and I'm going to look away. Now, had I not had that hockey game on, oddly enough, I probably would have tried to look outside with there being, you know, a lot of darkness or whatever, or I would have just physically tuned out. I would have stared over the top of my monitor, over the top of my webcam, and I probably would have been less engaged, right? And think about it. When you're driving and listening to somebody and having a conversation, you're not more or less engaged in the driving or the conversation. I mean, you know what you're doing. You're paying attention, but you can also, and sometimes when we have that cleanser, right, that thing that we can focus to briefly and come back, take our attention on something even, but oh, I was a touch embarrassed that the person, a hockey game. On the other hand, when I realized why I did it and that I did it for the right reasons, and had the person been comfortable enough to say, hey, what's going on? I see a hockey game reflecting in your artwork there. I have artwork behind me. And I would have said, oh, yeah, listen, I'm sorry. If it's distracting, let me turn it down. Let me tell you what's going on. Because if you truly are annoyed because you don't think I'm paying attention, then you should bring that up. Anybody should bring it up. If you're truly frustrated and annoyed that the other person is not paying attention to you, then you need to bring it up. And if you believe it's because they're paying attention to something other than a conversation, say something. For God's sake, say something.
The Bob Zemo Radio Showgram will return in just a moment.
Come on, bark like a dog for me.
Hello, hello, hello. This is your chaplain, Captain Noel. Your radio program of personal beliefs. Great and manifold are our blessings today. This great godly miracle of radio really gives me the opportunity to speak to you on the air.
Empire's mummy and the Holy Ghost.
And 6 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Don't drive angry, man. Don't drive angry.
Oh, righty.
You're listening to Marauder Radio with your host, the pirate king of the hole in the soul crew, Mr. Bob Zemo.
Mr. Bob, come on down here. Help me, Jesus. Help me, dude, God. Help me, Allah. Ah!
Hi, everybody. It's Bob Zemo, and I want to tell you about my healing video, Grief is Like a Vacuum, It Sucks, that is available on Amazon's Instant Video Store. Here's what it's all about.
You know, grief is like a vacuum, because it sucks. We sense when a storm is coming. Nobody wants to be known as a griever. We know when a storm is coming. We do everything in our life to avoid grief, and sometimes we just stay out in the rain. We go out of our way to avoid the pain of loss and the process of grief, and get out of the rain and get out of the storm and find that shelter and that hope.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm.
First and foremost, grief, the thing we all dread, the thing we all try to stay away from, is a healing process. This video is designed to help you develop your own unique style and process of grieving. It's about you discovering how you heal. This video is going to challenge you to find the grieving processes and the coping techniques that are going to work best for you.
You can buy my video or simply rent it via the Amazon Instant Video Store, and it's just a couple of bucks. Hey, for a couple of dollars, will you start your healing today? Cruise on over to BobZemo.com to find out how you can download or purchase Grief is Like a Vacuum, It Sucks.
It's a great video, everybody. You can even go to my website, BobZemo.com, and click on over to the Media Mayhem section, and you'll find a link for Grief is Like a Vacuum, It Sucks. And that's what I think is a key factor of our lives, right? Because we're always healing. We're always grieving. Grief is just another word for healing. And, you know, the other day I cut my hand. I got a splinter in there. I cut my hand. I should have been wearing my gloves. Cut my hand on a piece of pine that I had in my garage. And, started to bleed like hell. Of course, my Eliquis doesn't help that. Whenever I cut myself now because I'm taking Eliquis, because at one point I had AFib. Now I don't. Long story, open heart surgery 3 months ago. That's a time for another show. But anyways, to make a long story even longer. I cut myself, right? And so immediately my body starts to heal, right? So it starts to bleed. I go, I stop the bleeding because it clots, even though the Eliquis is in there. I clean up the wound. I ask my wife to peel out the splinter, which she does, and my hand is healing. Now, it's taking a little bit longer because I must have really done some damage to it, but it heals. It's scabbed over. There's new skin, right? We heal automatically. We heal automatically even when the scarring is on the soul. We just don't do it very effectively. We just don't do it very efficiently. Because we really don't go about healing the way that we need to go about healing. But at the end of the day, dysfunction in our lives, anger, addiction, anxiety, depression, all get to levels that they make us non-functional because we are healing incorrectly. We're healing in a way that isn't the way we need to heal. And so grief is like a vacuum. It sucks as a way to help you understand your own unique healing process. Because when we heal, dysfunction goes away. When we heal, we become healthier, happier. We function efficiently and effectively within our lives. We manage our lives. We function and interact with our relationships to people, places, and things so much more healthy than when we don't heal or we heal in the wrong way. So grief is like a vacuum. It sucks is a video that helps you kind of understand that. In addition, I wrote a book called Healing, It Ain't for Wimps. And that talks about the same process of finding your own healing style, of being you, flying your freak flag while you're trying to heal. Because when we heal accurately, that's not the right way to say it. But when we heal in our own way, that's what it is. When we heal according to our personality, our temperament, when we accept and acknowledge things, when we go through these various processes, we heal more efficiently, more effectively. Dysfunction diminishes. We can manage anxiety. We can heal the wounds. We can build back better. We can improve our relationships. And so grief is like a vacuum, or certainly check out Healing, It Ain't for Wimps. Because healing, folks, is often disguised as work. Work. Got to work for it. Got to work for it. I think that's the hardest thing as being a counselor, is that when people come into counseling and therapy, they're really, I believe truly, they're motivated to want to make changes. I do. I really do. However, once they get there, they realize it's work. They realize it's tough. They realize they have to come to the table ready to go and prepared. If they don't, it just doesn't go anywhere. I will often, when I'm a therapist, identify being bored with a client or bored with the process, more the process than the client, quite honestly, as stagnant. It's not going anywhere, you know. And part of it is I've got a limited amount of time to share my expertise with people. And I really want to be engaging with people who are there to learn, there to grow, right? They're motivated. They're coming into session with stuff. Leave the processing to me, right? I want to create an environment where you feel comfortable engaging. And so in some ways, when I'm initially starting to meet with people, I try different ways to create an environment. But if that person doesn't engage, they lay back, it doesn't go anywhere. And professionally, I find that very frustrating. Not that I'm frustrated with the person. I mean, they've got a lot going on. But I'm frustrated with the process. And I think that's, you know, the area that it gets a little tricky, right? Because you want to be empathetic. You want to be compassionate. You want to create that environment for someone to engage. And you don't even have to be a counselor, for goodness sakes. You could do this in your everyday life with everybody else that you interact with, right? Being able to provide some empathy, encouraging them to engage and talk to you. But there are times when people just are resistant. We sometimes become very frustrated with those people and their behaviors. What we should be frustrated with is the process. It's not the person that you're hoping will open up and talk to you that's the problem. It's not you that's the problem. It's the process that is not connecting that is the problem, that is the source of the frustration, the source of the boredom, right? What I mean by that is that people are not problems. People are people. Problems are problems. When two people come together and they're vulnerable and they open up and they use immediacy, which is the ability to articulate what you're thinking, feeling, and why, when you can do that and the other person can respond by providing some empathy, which demonstrates acknowledge and validation of what you just said. Now, remember, empathy doesn't mean I agree with you. I could be on the complete opposite side of the equation or opposite side of the conversation, the continuum of the conversation. But if I'm empathetic, I validate. I let you know that I heard what you said. I don't have to agree with you for that to be a cordial, intimate engagement. We used to do that in this country. We don't anymore because we immediately push back. We don't provide empathy because we think for some reason, if I acknowledge your point of view, that makes me wrong, which is just asinine. But when you're thinking about it, you're creating an environment for someone to engage, whether you're talking to your spouse, your kids, your partner, your friends. You want to feed into that interaction, into that dynamic in a healthy way. So we try to provide empathy, right? Which is the ability to reflect back what someone else is thinking, feeling, and why. Where does that come from? You need immediacy first. You need someone to start talking about what they're thinking, feeling, and why. And in a relationship, when you need that person to ignite that fire for that conversation, it can be quite frustrating. So we pivot, we move around. It's the same way in counseling, right? So if you're in counseling, you're in therapy, you got to go in ready to use immediacy. Share what you're thinking and feeling and why, for God's sake. Get connected to that person. Your therapist, your counselor, your process. That's what we're really trying to get connected to, is the process. We like the person because we have good feelings about it, because they create that environment, right? Nothing more frustrating than wanting to talk to your partner, your friend, your spouse about something, about what you're sensing and feeling, and they don't engage. Nothing more frustrating because the process goes nowhere, you know. But anyways, yard work. I love it. We're at that time of the year now where the weather is beautiful. You can get out and do some yard work. A couple of weeks ago, my wife said to me, that's probably a month or two ago, my wife said, our backyard sucks. It looks horrible. It's terrible. And she was right. She was absolutely right. There was a lot of stuff that we couldn't get done last fall because I was having some inability to work, quite honestly. I was born with two congenital heart defects. I had open heart surgery in 1971. Yes, the height of medical technology. And it was time for them to go back in, open up the hood, and make some additional corrections. But I didn't know about it at that time. I had gone through last summer traveling a lot and huffing and puffing and feeling winded. I couldn't even lecture and do the radio show without feeling winded, without feeling as though, and it was just crazy. I was gaining weight with no reason. I wasn't necessarily eating the wrong things or overeating. I wasn't exactly not exercising. I mean, I was active relatively, you know. But it, you know, I couldn't get out there. I couldn't do yard work. I was feeling terrible. And then I ended up in the hospital in late October for 8 days due to cardiac issues, which led to the scheduling of an open heart surgery at the end of January. And so all of last fall, we just completely had no opportunity to get the yard into shape. Not to mention last summer, we were traveling quite extensively. And so we hired a little neighborhood boy, nice kid, hired neighborhood boy to kind of cut the lawn. But that's about all he did. He didn't necessarily prune or trim or do any of that stuff. So the yard was looking pretty bad. But yesterday we kind of took a look around and the yard looks pretty good right now. We're getting there. We've got a lot more to do. But I have the energy to be able to do it. I have the energy to be able to go out and, you know, shovel dirt into a cart so that my wife can then drive the tractor with the cart and put the dirt around the fence line to shore that up. She was really doing a lot of the heavy lifting. I mean, sure, I had to shovel and put the dirt in, but it was 10 minutes maybe of really hard aerobic work. And what was interesting is it didn't really faze me. When I think back on it, it didn't really faze me nearly as much as it did last fall when I had that yard, that 5 yard of dirt delivered. And it was sitting on the driveway all winter long because I just couldn't get to it in the fall. I was so fatigued and unable to function because of my heart defects really needing to be addressed again. But yesterday we were out in the yard and it was great. You know, I've been using my chainsaw and I'm a lot of wood. I have a lot of trees in my yard and a number of them have fallen or toppled over or branches have fallen. And we've had to have the roof fixed twice in the 11, 12 years that we've been here. And so it's great to be able to get out in the yard, you know. And I was cleaning off the driveway yesterday, blowing all sorts of tree debris and stuff off the driveway. I was raking out the front gardens. I was pulling the tarp off the truck that I had. I had a tarp on my beater old truck over the winter as it's the window seals are not as great as they used to be. And trying to get the truck started. And the battery, of course, was dead after 7 months under the tarp. And it was just a good feeling to look at the yard and see the progress that we have made in our work. It's good to be, you know, it's like one of the reasons I love mowing the lawn, why it's so darn therapeutic, is you can look behind you and see what you've done, what you've accomplished. And also you can look and see what yet has to be done, right? So there's points at which you can physically see it, you know, visually. It's not a visualization like I'm running my mind through something, but it's just great. I think yard work is one of the best things, right? My wife and I said, too, that we won't go to the gym, we won't work out, because when we are doing yard work, we are physically active, as physically active as if we're at the gym. And I have to agree with that. So there's physical activity, which is good for us, good for me. Good cardiac rehab. Even though I go to cardiac rehab at the hospital 3 times a week, it's good to be out in the yard. It's fresh air. It's sunshine. We're getting things accomplished, which is mentally good. It helps our mental fitness, right? Our mental wellness. So we're physically active. We're helping our physical fitness and physical wellness, but we're also mentally active, getting things done. We're able to checkmark things off the list. We're able to visually see the improvements of our yard, that we can enjoy it, and we can enjoy being in the yard. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And so God, you know, yard work, I just love it.
Personally, I give us one chance in three.
You figured, oh, here's a loser, you know, a deadbeat.
Well, aren't you?
Well, yeah.
Every day's a gamble. I figure if I wake up in the morning, I'm a winner.
Put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers only.
Green Acres is the place to be. Farm living is the life for me. Land spreading out to far and wide. Keep Manhattan, just give me that countryside.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Oh, yes, I love yard work. Oh, my gosh. Well, folks, it's hard to believe we're coming towards the end of another Marauder Radio. This is episode number 10 that I started. Again, been doing podcasting on Blog Talk Radio. Holy shnikes. I mean, it has been a while. Maybe 10 years? 10 years I've been on Blog Talk Radio. And look, I'm still in my basement in my underwear talking into a microphone, hoping that this will go somewhere. Anyways, folks, it's been a great opportunity for me to sit down and talk with you if you've been listening live or if you're listening to this as a an archived show. But also, I end up taking some of these things, mixing them up, and putting smaller snippets of the shows out on my Marauder Radio homepage. There's a couple of links. You can go to bobzima.com and take a look at the different links for Marauder Radio, both the live version here on Blog Talk Radio, but also when I slice and dice them up and put them out as smaller tidbits, smaller podcast tidbits, about 20 minutes a pop usually. I tend to do three segments, so it works out really nice. Add a few things, you know, do some post-production excitement, but great opportunity for you to hear different segments of the shows if you're not able to listen to the full show. But I just want to let you know it's been great chit-chatting with you again today. Hope to talk to you again next week, and enjoy.
Time for me.
Here is done. I'm needed elsewhere now. I'm needed wherever outlaws rule the West. Wherever innocent women and children are afraid to walk the streets. Wherever a man cannot live in simple dignity. And wherever a people cry out for justice.